Today, no housing for you, or you, or you. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm the latest post covering finance and property news. Well, another report is out on the housing crisis, this one from Domain, who's just released their first home buyer report for 2026. So we're going to look at their findings and compare the trends with what's happening in New Zealand. Our Kiwi cousins actually can teach us a thing or two about housing affordability. Domain says, Australia remains one of the most challenging housing markets in the developed world for first home buyers. While international comparisons consistently show home prices here have risen faster than incomes over the past decade, the experience of affordability within the country is becoming increasingly uneven. In 2026, they say first home buyer affordability is being reshaped less by interest rates alone and more by the pace of growth in entry-level prices, which has accelerated sharply in several mid-price capital cities. As a result, saving a deposit is taking longer in most markets, while mortgage repayments remain stretched once buyers enter the market. Of course, Housing Minister Claire O'Neill, whilst acknowledging that housing access remained incredibly tough across Australia, said, while we're working to turn around a generational housing challenge with more housing supply, we make no apology for helping more than 225,000 first home buyers get into their own home since coming into office. She said, now, of course, that number's a bit of a, sounds big, but actually, if you look at it carefully, it's not that big at all. Opposition housing spokesman Andrew Bragg said the Domain data exposed the damage Labour has done to entry-level housing. The real sting is this. As entry-level prices rise, first home buyers who would not have needed government support are now being pushed into using the scheme just to compete. In effect, Labour is forcing young Australians to take on larger and longer mortgages than they would otherwise would. It's a cruel hoax to pretend this is making housing more affordable, he said. And here we should note that lower priced homes are growing nearly twice as fast as higher priced homes. Last year's entry level house price growth was 12.3%, and it's partially attributed to Labour's expanded first home buyer scheme, which has allowed a cohort to get into the market sooner by avoiding paying lenders mortgage insurance if they have a 5% deposit. Of course, it transfers the risk to the Crown. In the 3 months to January, home prices below the government's first home buyer scheme caps grew by about 9%, while homes with values higher than the caps grew by 4.6%. This gap has reinforced by property investors piling into the expectation of capital growth opportunities in this price zone as prices were expected to rise quickly. The 2026 Domain First Home Buyer Report assesses affordability through three linked measures. Entry-level price is actually at the 25th percentile, the time required to save for a 20% deposit, and mortgage serviceability for a 25 to 34-year-old couple on an average income. They assume both are working. They say that affordability outcomes are fragmenting across cities. The time required to save a deposit now ranges from 2 years and 7 months for an entry-priced unit in Darwin to 7 years and 7 months for an entry-priced house in Sydney. The gap between the shortest and longest saving timelines continue to widen, reflecting divergent price and income dynamics across the capitals. Sydney continues to record the longest saving time for entry-priced houses, but pressure has broadened. Sydney remains a city with the longest time to save for an entry-priced house deposit. Brisbane is in second place, followed by Adelaide and Perth, as rapid entry-level price growth has significantly extended saving timelines in these markets. The unit safety valve is breaking down, they say, in some capitals. For the first time on record, Brisbane has overtaken Sydney as having the longest time required to save for an entry price unit. And Adelaide and Perth have also moved up the rankings, indicating that units are no longer universally providing relief first home buyers. Income strength is increasingly influential, they say. Canberra stands out as a relative outlier. Modest house price growth, declining entry-level unit prices, and the highest average incomes across the capitals have resulted in shorter saving timelines and more favourable mortgage serviceability outcomes, despite high absolute prices. Melbourne's unit market makes a similar, though less pronounced pattern, they say. Mortgage stress remains widespread despite rate cuts in 2025. Interest rate reductions in 2025 have slowed further deterioration serviceability, but have not reversed it. All capital cities remain above the mortgage stress threshold for entry-priced houses, and mortgage stress for entry-priced units is now evident in Sydney, Brisbane, and Adelaide. So taken together, these outcomes show that first home buyers in 2026 face a dual affordability constraint. Deposits are taking longer to accumulate, and repayments remain elevated once buyers enter the market. And by the way, don't just mention the extended terms of mortgages, so they're paying more for longer too. Perth, Darwin, Brisbane, Adelaide recorded the strongest annual increases, exceeding 20%. Sydney also recorded strong double-digit growth and remains the only capital city where an entry-priced house exceeds $1 million. Melbourne and Canberra experienced more moderate increases, allowing income growth to partially offset rising prices. Now, of course, at one level, none of this is new. After all, I've been tracking the pressure on households and reporting on this from our service for years. But the continued deterioration of the story for prospective first-time buyers underscores the depth of the problem. And of course, every time the government offers additional incentives, it simply pushes home prices even higher and pulls forward those who were close to being able to buy. It solves nothing. In the meantime, the ongoing normalisation of two full-time incomes to pay the mortgage as a standard assessment criteria implicitly limits societal options, forces people to work longer, and of course, hold bigger mortgages for years longer. Whilst it boosts the profits of the banks and lifts the stamp duty takes to the states, overall, it's excluding more from owning property and forcing delays in household formation, having babies, and extending working lives in the process. Oh, and incidentally, the ABS today showed that estimates for average weekly ordinary time earnings for full-time adults, which were seasonally adjusted, increased by 3.8% annually to just over $2,051 in November 2025. That was lower than the annual growth of 4.5% seen to May 2025 and 4.6% to November 2024. Annual growth was 3.7% for the private sector and 3.9% for the public sector. And let's not mention the frozen tax bans and the higher tax take. Incomes are being compressed at the same time. Again, I see that in my surveys. So the bottom line is simple. The government's meddling in housing over the past couple of generations has created a monster, which is now consuming its young. But we double down again. And again. Now, it does not have to be like this. Over in New Zealand, the independent economist Tony Alexander has argued in a new report that New Zealand's three-decade investor-driven house price boom is over. Average house price growth has structurally slowed, he says. Investor participation has fallen, and the psychological must-buy-now pressure that dominated since the middle of the 1990s has dissipated. He ran a survey in New Zealand which showed that a record net 38% of investors plan to sell in the next 12 months, and net purchasing intentions for investors are at all-time lows. Even with economic recovery and easing debt servicing costs in 2024 and 2025, investors still want to reduce their exposure. As a result, since the middle of 2022, house prices have shown no clear trend, essentially going sideways despite 3.25% of interest rate cuts from the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, which has dropped mortgage rates to pre-pandemic levels. This period of catch-up is exactly what young home buyers have been waiting for, he says. And rentals, by the way, are also easing too, because population growth via net overseas migration has slowed significantly and is now tracking well below new dwelling supply. So, folks, the clues are simple. Cut migration to match capacity to build supply, reduce investor incentives, and target stable home prices rather than growing them massively. And note that interest rates are not the only tool in the shop. Lending controls should be part of the story too. So the bottom line is this, it's really not that hard, but no, more Aussies are excluded by design. Pollies, stop playing politics with housing, please. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultant standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.